This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jikoji on this beautiful Sunday morning. It's wonderful to be practicing with you. I'm happy you're here. I am really pleased to introduce our guest speaker today, my Dharma sister, your Dharma sister, visiting from Switzerland. This is Francesca Hogetsu Ho-en. And she is a Ho-en gift, Phoenix gift. Yes. She has been practicing Zen since 2014 with our lineage Phoenix Cloud at temples in Switzerland with the senior most lineage holder in our lineage, Vanya Palmers, who is her teacher, who made her a priest. And we're very happy to have her here. In addition to her Zen practice, she follows the teachings of Brother David Steindl-Rast and his gratefulness practice, which we have been receiving, even though she doesn't know it. In her practice here, this quiet and sweet awareness of gratitude permeates her presence at Jikoji. So we've all been benefiting from her. Francesca finds great joy and wisdom in the natural world. And being from Switzerland, she especially enjoys the teachings of the mountains. Our smaller mountains have been teaching her different teachings. And we're very happy that she has been willing to practice with us and today to give the talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, good morning, everyone. Good morning. Also, hello from my side. And hello to the online Sangha. Thank you, Nanzen, for introducing me so kindly. I'm just going to mention some words about Brother David, because I will quote him two or three times so that you know maybe who he is. Brother David, he's a Benedictine monk, so in the Christian tradition. He's from Austria, but he lived many years in the States in a Benedictine monastery. And the Vatican, so the Catholic Church in Rome, they asked them to do some interreligious dialogue, like back in the, 50s, 60s. So he ended up with a lot of yogic Swamijis and rabbi, I think you say, Jewish rabbi. And he ended up at Tassajara Zen Mountain Center, practicing with Suzuki Roshi. So he practiced also a lot of Zen. And I really appreciate his universal language of spirituality, of the essence. He really practiced in a lot of traditions, and he has a beautiful way of speaking and describing the great mystery, as he often says. And I thought I'm going to talk today a little bit about a verse, a Zen verse that I really appreciate. I haven't seen it here, but I have seen it at Tassajara. I've seen it at San Francisco Zen Center places, also at Felsentor, that's the temple in Switzerland where I practice a lot. And usually it's written on the han, so this wooden piece, so this piece of wood outside the zendo. And Jero was hitting the han in the morning, so 15 minutes before we came to sit, he hit this wooden piece, so it made duck, 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 duck. And often there is written on a verse, and this verse goes like this. The great matter of birth and death all impermanent, quickly passing. Wake up, wake up. Don't waste this life. So every time I hear it or I see it, sometimes I found a book recently and I wrote it on a postcard, so to sign where I'm in the book. And I saw, oh yeah, there's this nice little verse. It really moves me, this sentence. And sometimes I even get this, how do you call it, goosebumps. Because it's really true. And I mean, wasting life, maybe we can say this after, I don't know, 6 years. Wasting life, I hope not. But I think for me, it's more like wasting time. I feel, I mean, we all do probably, we waste a lot of time or energy. If we have to do stuff that we don't like to do, for example, and then we get this resistance, we try to avoid it. Yeah, there is a lot of fighting in this, and I think it's a waste of time, and yeah, it's a waste of lifetime in a way. So there, I have no recipe for this, but somehow we have to figure out how to accept things that we don't like. I mean, this is one part of we try to do on our path. And also in Zazen, it's not always fun and beautiful. So also there we have kind of accept how it is right now in the moment. And what also comes up when I think about this wasting time, a wasting life, is Brother David used this word. I don't know how you say when you walk during your sleep. So some people walk while they are sleeping, and he calls them like sleep walker in German. I don't know if it's also in English. And of course, he means someone that is not really aware. I mean, you don't even know where you're going. You're like blind, but not aware. And I think if we don't see what this life is really about, if we don't honor what this life really is about, we waste, in a way, a lot of life force, life energy, bigger energy around us. So it's an invitation to really see what this life is all about, or this great mystery. We don't even know it, but we can get in touch with it. We really allow life to move us, to touch us. And in this Zen verse, we also hear about impermanence. So everything is very quickly passing. All of a sudden, we're 40 or we're 60 or we're 80. And in impermanence, sometimes it scares me because I think we're all going to lose everything what we really love at some point. It's just passing, and we have to accept it. I mean, everyone has. It's one of these big Buddhist, not Buddhist, also Buddhist, but life laws, in a way. It's just a matter of fact that things are impermanent in this conditioned world. But there is also some maybe some good parts of this impermanence. If we're stuck in a difficult situation, there it helps us. We know it will also pass this situation. So we can also like trust on impermanence in a way. Or rest in impermanence. It will also help us. And maybe the teaching of this impermanence is really that, I mean, we say it one moment after a moment, it arises and it dies, this moment. And if we're really aware, I think we can then see the preciousness of just this one moment or one breath. Just this breath. And not taking it for granted, although the breath, of course, it's always here. So we take it a lot for granted, but it's the impermanence invites us to really see this breath or this moment where a leaf is shining brilliant, that we really appreciate this, I think. And so to come back to our nice little verse, wake up, wake up. Sometimes I ask myself, to what shall I wake up? Like, what is this waking up? And I think we all know that it would be nice if we just would wake up and then it would just be all nice and clear. And we know that this is not the path. So waking up again to this moment, how this moment is, and feel whatever is showing up. And maybe it's very sad, or maybe it's full of grief or very difficult and pain. But also there, if we allow these feelings to be felt, I mean, they show up and they want to be felt. That's part of the feelings and emotions. We get somehow very, how you say, vivid or alive because we feel it in our heart. And it doesn't matter what emotion it is, we get tender around in our heart. So it's really waking up to what is here. And I have to remind myself also that when I'm stuck in my maybe drama sometime, it's only the mind. And there is so much else that is also present. So there are things happen at the same time. So there is so much beauty and so much suffering at the same time. There is maybe hope, but there is also, hope and longing for something, but there is also some confidence in the same way. So we have to sometimes shift our awareness to see what there is around. And I really like also it's a picture I have, but the trees and the mountains and the insects, the animals, they are our sisters and brothers. So we can also wake up to this inner connectedness with nature, instead of just being in our drama. We are not so alone as we sometimes think that we are. And as probably all traditions, I say emphasis, or I don't know. I mean, we should wake up to, or we should, I mean, everyone tries to put us in this direction to see, to waking up to what we really are or where we really come from. And these are what I just mentioned. It's outside. It's in nature, it's outside, but it's always the big question, who are we? And this conditioned existence here, all the phenomena that appear and disappear, this is one reality. And I think every one of us knows that there is something, maybe, I mean, we cannot really explain it, underneath something that, I say, permeates everything, is in everything. And we can make this experience during Zazen, but we can also do it everywhere. But in Zazen, or when we sit, it's just a nice, we take time also to maybe realize this. And Koban, he wrote he painted a calligraphy that is now in our little city, Zendo, in Switzerland. And there are two kanjis. And it means Dharma source. So Dharma as the phenomena. So it means the source of all phenomena. I love this calligraphy. It's right pointing to this. Try to speak about this source of which everything arises, and we are not only part of it, we are a manifestation of it. It's like this ground of being that holds everything, or that everything comes off. And I think sitting is a lot about, of course, it's about calming our minds and maybe get in touch with our emotions. But it's a lot about realizing that we come out of this great mystery, how Brother David is calling it. You know, in German, there is, also in English, there is this word God, but the word divine doesn't exist in German. So that's why he uses the great mystery, because we can't grasp it, but still we know that there is this great mystery where we all come from, that we are. And what I really started liking, that was in the beginning not so easy for me, because I come from this Zen perspective, but Brother David, he's doing a lot of prayers in this Christian tradition, and he's a lot in relationship to this great mystery. There is this great mystery and me, or not the small ego, but, and I just love this idea to get really more in relationship to this divine, to the source. And I think when we do that, we are automatically more grateful, because we see where things come from, And we, I think we also try to honor things more. We pay much more attention and we want to respect them and we want to maybe give something back because we see that it's a gift. And just how we shape or how we care relationships between each other and maybe our pets or our plants in the garden. We can also care about this relationship with the divine or the great mystery, the source. I think we can do that. Just, of course, in our heart, then maybe acting outside of it. I remember when I was maybe 10 years ago, one time in the Zendo, Vanya, my teacher, he said this nice little sentence, and it goes very well with this, what I just talked about. He just said, I have it in German. We sit to honor the beauty a mystery of this life. That's why we come together and why we sit. And to express this, every one of us in his or her individual manner. I think that was it from my side. Thank you for listening. I don't know if any one of you has a question.
Thank you for your words. We recited before your talk the Metta Sutra, and it talks about anger and hatred. This is, a part of the mystery. And to me, this is where the rubber meets the road in this practice, because it's pervasive in me and everywhere. The sitting is fundamental of what you're talking about, of waking up, I suppose. to the way it is moving. I thought maybe you might, I put you on the spot or in the chair. Mm-hmm. I encounter this, I guess I should say, primarily for me in traffic.
So you get very angry in traffic.
They're either grandmothers or raging maniacs. I'm good. So anyway, that's something that I continually am unaware of momentarily, and probably because of practicing, getting older, I quickly recognize this, and I ask myself, at this moment, how do I want to live? So this anger, hatred, and just heinous crimes of our ancient history is alive and well. As somebody described it, as our evolution, veins of both just unfathomable love and kindness for others and yourself evolving simultaneously.
So I'm not sure if you want me to comment something. The problem is I didn't get all of it. I'm sorry. Some sentences or something, I just didn't understand it, some words.
Yeah, me too, sometimes. it's overrated. Mm. But I think you understand maybe when I gave the metaphor of traffic. People. It's really about people and my relation to this. And I'm a person, and fundamentally my relationship to myself in this context of anger and hatred, heinous crimes throughout our ancient history. What are we going to do? What do you do if this is the way that it is? Is there anything? Yeah.
So you mean I, in my little context, or you as the whole planet Earth, like the whole humanity?
Humanity. Or I also see it in the insect world. It's just amazing what insects do to each other. Amazing how violent it can be. Violence, hatred, anger. This is what I don't know in some ways what to do other than with people. And I find myself arising, I think it might be, as I said, because of the practice and maybe other things, getting older, I recognize this because it's a very physical sensation. It arises in me, and what am I going to do? And much of what I do is run or leave because I don't know it. Fight or flight, they call it. I pull over to the road or pull over to the slow side, breathe, and slowly, like everything, it passes or moves, I should say. But this is, I think, very important, this part. For me.
So I know anger also very well.
Really?
Maybe not so much on the in the traffic. I just drive on the right side. I just don't even rush anymore. I'm just grandma driving. I mean, not grandma, but a little bit faster, maybe. But it's, you save maybe, I don't know, maybe it takes you 5 minutes longer to get there, but you save a lot of energy.
Except for the people behind you that you're holding up.
I would say a Swiss law, just keep the rules going, and then it's all fine. don't drive too fast and not too slowly. Just be on the right side.
Red light, no one's there.
Have you ever done, I'm with anger, I know this emotion very well, and it's really funny. I'm quoting now another teacher of mine. She's from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, and she's doing these feeding your demons. I don't know if you ever heard of that, of this method or practice. And it's funny, she said that she came back when, I don't know, she lived there like 10 years in the Himalayas, and she came back and all her friends, they were all sitting meditation for years, and they came back and they just freaked out because of nothing, basically, and everyone was angry and yelling around. So she asked, what did we do all in the sitting? We were not able to really look at our anger or our heavy emotions. So she established this meditation or this practice, and it's called Feeding Your Demons by Lama Sultri Malione. And I tried it. I did like a little education on it, and I have to say, this really changed my emotional life. It's just sitting on the cushion. Sometimes it's also, I get lost. I'm just with all these emotions, but there I have a path where I can go on. And because you're active you're shaping like this problem. It's not that like you're sitting and you're overwhelmed by your emotions. You're really shaping something because you change also the perspective of this emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very helpful. It was very helpful to me. So maybe that is something that you could try. I think everyone should do this. It's really amazing.
A martial artist I know, she talks about having to work with a 300-pound person on top of her. How do you get this 300-pound person?
It's off you.
Pardon me?
How you get her off you.
Yeah. It's also a metaphor.
I have just a very simple question. In German, you say there's no word for divine. Is there a word for devotion?
Devotion, yes. I mean, there is a word for divine, but it's associated to God. And sometimes people, especially in Europe from the Catholic Church, they struggle with the church and don't want to have God everywhere. That's the problem.
I have a question. I'd love to know how Brother David's teachings and talks specifically complemented and helped you in your Zen practice. Is there a specific specific things that helped your practice by listening to and hearing him speak?
Well, I mean, I know quite well because he shows up, or he showed up all the recent years at Felsentor and at Vanya's place. So I met him quite a lot, and I wouldn't say he helped me with the sitting practice. I think he just opened me up for a wider spirituality. And maybe he opened up my heart, I think. Mm. And being really, I mean, some sources of Zen, it depends what you read, but sometimes it's also quite, I don't know, like this, and maybe a little bit, for me, for my taste, dry. It depends what you read. And he kind of opened me up to this, I don't know, big heart, also prayers and like this relationship that he is so much. In the beginning, I thought, why are you always talking to this great mystery like you? But this is devotion. This is devotion. And this is, I think, really being in relationship. Mm. This is really, that really moves me.
I have two questions. So first one is, I know that Brother David is, he's exposed to different type of the religions. So what does he learn, like the differences or the common of each?
I think he brings it all down to the essence. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really matter. I mean, all traditions, all spiritual paths, they only have one goal or one... they share the essence, and the essence is beyond the forms, beyond how we approach it. He recently wrote a book. It's, I think it's only in German because, yeah, it's like a year old. I don't know. It's a Catholic prayer, the main Catholic prayer. It's Vater Unser. I don't know what's in English, if it even exists in English. I don't know. And he wrote a prayer for all. And I just read the foreword. And he said it's so important that humanity needs one prayer in the sense that everyone can participate it in something that brings us together out of this ego-centric view, that we can all do it together in a way, or express it together. And it doesn't matter where we're coming from and what tradition we have. So he takes it out and he's talking about all those words, not in a Christian way, in a very open way, just really human, open mind, open heart.
My second question is, you talk about the impermanent aspect of things. I love to explore more about it because I think that really helps. Like daily lives is more like things like to be like, your mindset could be like more permanent thinking about things that dramatic, like make things more dramatic. So I love to like hear more about like your maybe expanding a little bit more on that concept.
Well, it's not a concept. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
All the rest is a concept, basically. I mean, a lot. All these teachings and, you know. But, I mean, this is one of our big traps, that we think things are permanent. And just for maybe for 5 minutes, they don't. I mean, of course, we, my shape of, I mean, my shape an hour ago was more or less the same. But if you look really closely, it already changed. And I mean, we all want, if it's nice, our life, we want that everything is just, nothing should ever change. Mm-hmm. We just want to keep it like that. And if it's miserable, we want that it just changes immediately. Mm-hmm. And I mean, biggest teacher of impermanence is nature. It changes mm-hmm. all the time, everything. And even the earth, I mean, we got the four seasons. I mean, not everywhere on the planet, but also there are also seasons, like with rain and the right. So it's one big cycle, and there is nothing that can, in this conditioned world, that can, I say, overlast this or not be part of it.
I have two questions. One is in the verse you just shared with us, right? You said, wake up. Oh, it's actually the verse, wake up and wake up. Could you share some of your experience that you recently gotten woke up or just woke up? Second question is, just like that gentleman shared regarding the traffic experience, so when dealing with negativity, you just shy away from it, or like some of the chanting with it, you bring kindness to them. But do you just shy away from them, or you kind of bring kindness to them?
So first question, waking up. I think we all have this concept that waking up is very special, and maybe with some stars around our head and something magical. I would say I wake up every day and I get deluded every day a lot of time. And we wake up for maybe a second, and then our mind is always producing all this stuff. So the clouds are coming very fastly, but all of a sudden, the clouds are gone. So maybe in Brother David's words, let yourself be surprised instead of waking up. Let yourself be surprised. And so your second question, I think I got it right. So you ask me, when you got anger, what do you do then? Or if you try to avoid it, or if you bring kindness to it, right?
Yeah.
You know the answer?
What is your response there?
How do you grow compassion for people who don't practice compassion with people who look like me? Or
with people who?
How do you grow compassion for people who maybe don't practice compassion towards people who look like me? Yeah.
What it means towards people like?
Yeah, like, you know, like my culture, my like my skin tone, or my you know, people that look like me. Yeah.
So when people who don't who are maybe mean to you.
Yeah, or just, you know, are out there spewing hate, or, you know, saying certain things about, and not just my own culture, but like about other people that don't look like them.
So there is the metta practice. You know that? I mean, it's a practice. You start with, you say all these metta verses, like, may you, you start with yourself. May I be happy? May I be healthy? May I be safe?
Mm.
Then you take someone you know pretty well that you like. Then you take someone who is like a neutral person.
Mm-hmm.
And you take someone maybe you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take someone that you that is really mean.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a practice. And I think don't expect that I will just, it's a hard practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think we all carry these worries around what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are more into the news and they read more and they are more informed what's going on. It's also a big question to me. Sometimes I'm more worried or more also like what you say.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we just focus on what we can, where we have influence,
mm-hmm.
like being kind to your people around, mm-hmm. to your community. Influence. So, circle of influence. And I'm sorry, I didn't get it in English, the Metta Sutta. I have it in German in my head, but there is this phrase, wherever people are, in which realm, they are very deluded at the, I say,
ignorant.
Yes, and they are
blind,
yeah, blind. And some realms are, they are just stuck there. I mean, wherever they are, they also want to be happy. I mean, although, I mean, they don't see that they're not getting happy there. But I read this Metta Sutta quite often because it's just so much wisdom in it. Mm-hmm. And just reading it calms me down.
Yes, this is.
Oh.
I have the similar questions. So I think that maybe kind of come up. I have a question in those people who are mean to us. Mm-hmm. So what if you know someone who's really close to you, you love one, but they are not mean to you or others, but they are mean to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You see they are suffering, and then you feel like you do not, you feel like you want to help. But then you don't know how to help them.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of times that they have a key, like they have to use that key.
Mm-hmm.
But what would you do in that case? Do you use words, talk to them, or do you focus on ourselves, or do you wait for them, wait them out?
I think talking is always good. I mean, if you can reach them by words, then try to talk. And I think sometimes you can't do anything. It's their process.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing you can do is holding space,
mm-hmm.
or being present. Just hold the presence. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's sad, but you cannot fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you very much for being here. This is my first week in Mescal's, first time in Djibouti. So I really appreciate that
having this opportunity to hear your wise words. So I have a little bit of experience with spirituality and practices, and I was talking to some of the other folks, and they mentioned sometimes when they practice, they have a North Star guiding them, a direction they want to go to. Mm-hmm. For some people, it's like they want to elevate and out of this physical form. Some people, they just want to be present and help them with daily errands or daily life. I wonder, in your experience, when you practice, do you have this North Star guiding you towards a direction, or you're just letting things happen when it depends on the situation?
I would say I'm guided. And I also want to be guided, to be honestly. So I think maybe it's also this relationship that I'm talking, that I was talking about. We have to maybe open more our senses and heart to see that we are really embedded also.
Do you have a goal that you're trying to reach?
What, a goal?
A direction.
Goal.
A goal. Yeah, I would like to be a kind of person.
So with impermanence, I often struggle with setting goals, like, because I feel that like if during the day, if I'm hungry or if I want to do something, I go do it. But if it's like on a longer horizon, like then I feel, oh, like, I guess it doesn't matter. Like it's impermanent. So I feel like sometimes I feel a little bit lost. Like on one hand, I feel free because I just do whatever I want on the day off. And on the other hand, I feel like, am I delusional? Like, should I be setting some goals? Yeah. You have such experience. Like, I feel kind of, once I realized it more and more like impermanence, I lost the drive or will to pursue the goal. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know if it's a language problem.
What is she saying? That because she has become intimate with impermanence, mm-hmm. when she's sometimes confronted or what arrives in some open space, she thinks, what's the point? I don't have chitta drive, you know, I don't feel this drive to accomplish anything because
it's anyway
long term.
It's impermanent. What's the point? Uh-huh. And she's wondering, you know, what to do in that space. Yes.
Like, am I okay this way or am I delusional?
I think it's normal in a way that, I mean, this is also impermanent, this your direction or how you, where you want to go. I mean, this is also dependent on things from outside, and if maybe they are if these conditions are not arising, then maybe you lose this drive.
Mm-hmm.
But it will come again.
Okay.
So if it's, I imagine the spiritual drive, or is it not the spiritual drive that
you need? Not spiritual, all the drive, like worldly, spiritually, yeah, just once I would have thoughts that, oh, I want to do something, but then it just goes, I don't really do it because I don't feel the drive to actually do it. Like the thought comes and it just goes away. And then, but I just feel like maybe, so like, should I be actually channeling my energy actually to accomplish something, or this way is okay? Yeah, worldly goes like anything as well. Yeah.
I think it depends what you want to do. Mm-hmm. If you just want to go for, if it's something important, you should really keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe it's not important.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't try to feel important. Okay. Yeah. I sometimes feel like everybody's life or past has been pre-programmed, because there are so many good things and bad things that are out of control. For example, like, you cannot choose your childhood, you cannot choose your parents, mm-hmm. right? So that will have a big influence on your personality,
mm-hmm.
which will influence a lot of on your life options. You know, who are you going to marry? Where are you going to work?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are things that we don't choose. And I feel like there's so many big moments. I used to have a preference, but they always not go to the way that I want it to be. If that's the case, then why do we need spending effort and trying? If everything is designed, for example, you are designed to be guided by the supernatural. If somebody is designed to be, you know, not awoken at all. So I just wonder, like, sometimes should we always go with our inner mind? But that, how would you know it's your mindset instead of it's pre-programmed by the supernatural? Yeah, so should we just go with the flow, you know, and be acceptable of whatever we have to go through, but we have to try really hard. But that's contradictory with emptiness.
So I don't think that there is something programmed. I don't believe in superpower. So if I just said, I'm guided, it doesn't mean that there is someone who is playing my life. It's not that way, I think it. It's funny, I mean, Vanya and Brother David, they talk quite often about this, because, I mean, we all, yeah, we have these questions, as you do. And they say that a lot is very given, where you're born, your families, how you grow up, and there you cannot really, a lot of is already like given, but there is a tiny little bit of space, and there you can act, and there you're free to act and to choose. And so a lot of how our life is, we have to accept, but we also have some free space, and there you can choose what you do.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.